Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım.
Hello and welcome to Human Reaction, your favorite Nazi podcast or Groiper podcast, whatever we are these days.
I'll play along.
I am Kyle Mack. I'm joined with David Rand, and we got Bennett over on the buttons. Dave, what are we talking about today?
4 months and 9 years ago, Donald Trump bequeathed unto us a movement to make America great again. And tonight, we declare the MAGA Civil War is upon us.
What is this, the...
What is this? I don't know. I had to hit the right tone. It was kind of like more Winston Churchill than I meant to, but I don't know what Lincoln's voice
sounds like. The War of Groiper Aggression? What's going on here?
There you go.
I was thinking more FDR.
There you go. That was more FDR.
Yeah! Right.
Yeah!
Be sure to like and subscribe, leave us a review, or do whatever the thing is on the platform that you enjoy listening to us on.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
Okay, let's get into this.
Yeah, so last week we did a video on the Nick Fuentes, Tucker Carlson interview. Blew up really big. It's a super interesting moment in the discourse amongst the right and how to contend with the rightmost flank of the nationalism that is rising up in the right. From that, Ben Shapiro did his video responding to it and basically said, everyone who isn't me is kicked out of the conservative movement. And so we're going to dive into kind of that. And then those even more cascading effects leading into what happened on Tuesday this week, with a lot of elections going to the Democrats, and then for people saying, oh man, this civil war has undermined the ability of the right to project itself and to have good vibes, and now the vibes are lost, and so we're back to square one. The 1,000-year reign of the Republicans is over before it can begin.
After we kind of go through the fallout of this war that seems to be going, we want to dig into those poll numbers and see, like, what is the actual story here? What can we take away from how that election turned out to?
Yes. A lot of people are keyholing what they want it to be about to make it about that, rather than actually responding to what do we actually know about why people voted and who they voted for.
Yeah.
So let's dive into it. So Ben Shapiro here released his video. We're not going to hit the whole thing, of course, but just starting it out and to get a sense of what his argument was.
I want to do something different on today's show. We're going to cover one topic in depth. That topic is, I think, the most important thing happening in the country. It was a hot topic last week, but I wanted to take some time to really gather my thoughts and speak on it in coherent fashion, holistic fashion. That topic is the fragmentation of the political right. That fragmentation is being caused purposefully by a splinter faction of people led by a young man named Nick Fuentes. They call themselves the Groipers. They are white supremacists. They hate women, Jews, Hindus, many types of Christians, brown people of a wide variety of backgrounds, blacks, America's foreign policy, and America's constitution. They admire Hitler and Stalin. And that splinter faction is now being facilitated and normalized within the mainstream Republican Party. The main agent in that normalization is Tucker Carlson, who is an intellectual coward, a dishonest interlocutor, and a terrible friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Going after it. Now, Tucker Carlson did bring up Ben Shapiro in the Fuentes interview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of might have pointed that all these people are calling them Nazis now.
Well, and in a lot of ways, Ben Shapiro created Nick Fuentes.
Yeah, 100%.
That's kind of the argument, right?
that
Nick lays out of his whole origin story, which you can go back and watch that.
What did he say? He tried to, I think Tucker.
Groom him.
Well, no, I think Tucker said it. He tried to strangle him in his crypt.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. By retweeting certain things.
Yeah, he groomed him up in his like little baby carriage, and then he strangled him afterwards when he started acting up. That's really the analogy I think you're looking for.
Started asking all the wrong questions. So
yeah, once the baby started talking,
yeah, how dare you?
Like, shut up, baby.
The baby's like, but what? Why are we giving all this money to Israel? Are they our best ally? You know, like, yeah. Can't ask those questions.
Oh, no, the baby's a noticer.
It's a knower.
It's a knower. Yeah, so you kind of get the vibe of the Ben Shapiro approach in this. Yeah, I watched through the entire thing. It really wasn't a whole lot of Ben Shapiro giving his own arguments. It was kind of, here, I'm going to frame up a clip of Nick just being like, by the way, he hates women. Cue clip of him making a joke on his podcast, you know, like, and it's like 10 minutes of that. And then it's like, now let's move on to Tucker. Oh, by the way, did you know this about Tucker? Pull a clip. And it's kind of, it's that like really dishonest hit job style of thing that I just hate. And it felt really gross just watching it. It wasn't like, it didn't help you.
Well, like, thank you for the service of the podcast, of watching it on our behalf, Kyle.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. You, one of 33 million people to watch it, and felt gross about it. So what was his arguments against Tucker?
It was kind of like, here's the questions I would have asked Nick kind of stuff, but he didn't do that. And then there was just kind of like, oh, by the way, Tucker said mean things about Trump in the past. Here's him saying that back in the day. You know, like it's those types of things where it's just like, I'm going to frame up 20 seconds of my own monologue here and then give a clip of Tucker for 30 seconds doing the thing that I'm and from my kind of take on this.
But Ben Shapiro was another Trumper.
Yes.
Right. So like, how could he, especially given that Tucker has released the context of the leaked tweet of the leaked messages about them, and it was about them misleading him on voter fraud. Right. Yes. And like he made an
about
error
Sydney,
as a reporter.
The Sydney, whatever her name was.
Sweeney?
I was just going to say.
I knew
what was her name.
Was
it was that lawyer chick that was kind of annoying.
At yeah. The who was going to be like the Kraken, going to release the Kraken or something like that.
Yeah. It was him being really irritated. Like, I'm not getting full answers from her. Yeah. It was him being annoyed by
that. Well, and there's no real evidence that they ever had that they really brought to the fore that would really spike the ball on there being voter fraud. Like, he trusted them and then they didn't deliver.
He was frustrated by that.
So I would be pissed off about that too, of course, and especially when you had the largest news show on television. And then you go on and say, hey, there's real stuff going on here. And then it turns out there isn't any.
Yeah, he also goes in, he plays some clips on, he does the Winston Churchill stuff from Daryl Cooper.
Oh, no.
It's like, how dare Tucker Carlson platform who he says is the greatest historian of his, you know, it's the thing that we went through all that a year ago, right?
Yeah, right. They're still mad about that, huh?
Yeah, him talking about Jeffrey Sachs being like a Chinese asset and a Jew hater, like a self Jew hater kind of thing.
That's not appropriate at all. Like, how could you do
that? He's apparently a Chinese asset. That's what Ben Shapiro laid out with it. And then also Candace Owens being awful. She was terrible working at the Daily Wire. And here's all the crazy things she's saying. It was like clips like that. And then coming back, it was just like, but we all know Charlie Kirk was a great defender of Israel. And that's how he kind of wrapped it up. It's just like, so they're all betraying Charlie Kirk's legacy. And then podcast over.
I like that
was
totally,
that was the story narrative.
I like that they
podcast.
Totally ignore the last like 2 weeks of his life text messages and
last
stuff.
2 years in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, particularly the last couple
of
weeks.
All of the evidence that has come out so far definitely shows that there was some kind of shift in Charlie Kirk's mind about these things as he was trying to contend with the contradictions of America First that the Fuentes types that the Groypers are exploiting. Mm-hmm. Right? There's just a contradiction there. How do you contend with America First foreign policy while supporting the state of Israel with no questions asked?
Yeah.
You know, like he just can't do it. At least have answers for the questions.
Well, that's the thing. He was
but
like,
instead is gaslighting. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of gaslighting that's going on about that. It's just like, don't believe your eyes with the text messages that you're reading that are 100% confirmed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, from what I've seen, I haven't paid too much attention to it since the Kirk assassination, but like, it seemed to me he's like, we are losing the argument. Like, it's not like I'm anti-Israel, like I hate them now. Like, he's like, how are we defending this? I think ultimately towards the end, he was kind of fed up with it, but yeah.
And just by having Dave Smith on, Jewish donors were threatening to remove money. And Tucker he's like, Carlson. That's exactly the sort of thing that fuels
you?
Nick Fuentes. What are we doing?
He said he was going to start bringing Candace back into the fold now mm-hmm. that she's back set up and everything. Mm-hmm. Like the reason why she wasn't in the fold was because she spent an hour after or a year after the Daily Wire firing to kind of set up her own stuff. And then she was going to start to get kind of back into the loop again.
Yeah.
And he specifically talked about that mm-hmm. in the stuff. Like, you know, and they tried to always try to sham like their friendship was never real. They stopped being friends a long time ago. And it's like pretty clear that's not true.
Yeah. but it's all the exposing of the lies that keeps them on their back heel that makes this whole argument from Shapiro and others seem so disingenuous.
Yes. That in lies the problem.
I am shocked.
I'm shocked.
Well,
and like, it's not like Ben Shapiro's never had any controversial takes that you might take out of context. Oh, wait, there's no context.
Well, this is something I've referenced on the podcast so many times with my disdain of Ben Shapiro, but it was always one of those things that just always left a sour taste in my mouth for, I don't know, the past decade of
14 years
within the conservative movement. I started to really notice it in like 2015 personally, when I was like 19 years old and working in conservative politics. I started seeing this a lot more. So I've always had this disdain for like a decade now. He talked about, this is him going back to the Ron Paul, like the presidential campaign. I believe he tweeted this out during a debate, was Ron Paul is manifestly insane. As in previous debates, he is now gripping the pen as if he was, as he would the neck of a Jew. And he spells Jew, J-O-O.
So stay there for just one more second. What is the psychology of a man who concludes this from this friendly country doctor talking about stopping, you know, insane endless wars and ending the Federal Reserve System to put us on a common sense money supply system? You're like, what, how do you conclude?
Clearly he hates Jews.
How do you conclude Jews from that?
Yep.
I mean, okay. So like,
this has always been the woke phenomenon on the conservative side. Like it's the same thing that the left would always do. They would scream Nazi, they would scream racist, whatever. But then on the right, there was always this control mechanism that existed, which was, oh, you're an anti-Semite. We're just going to deem you that to kind of like control you within the movement in mm-hmm. some fashion. Like, don't step out of bounds or else you're an anti-Semite.
Exactly. This sort of psychology to me, you know, kind of indicates a insane amount of defensiveness mm-hmm. about non-topics that have nothing to do with this, other than that Ben Shapiro supported the war in Iraq and thinks it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so next tweet. Yeah, let's next one here, because this is just more demonstrative of that same mental model.
He's quoting Ron Paul? Politics isn't beanbag, it's beanie wearing Jews putting fluoride in the water. Yeah, I'm sure Ron Paul said that.
Yeah,
I think that's a direct quote.
it's like trying to be funny, but it's actually just like your paranoia.
Yeah, here's Israelis like to build, Arabs like to bomb crap and live in open sewage. This is not a difficult issue. Settlement rocks, #.
Settlements
This is him
rock.
Talking about enemy casualties are okay by me. This is like an old kind of famous town hall article that he put out.
Yeah, so the top tweet.
Can you say the years of this?
The first two were in 2012. This one's in 2010.
And then the civilian casualties?
That's 2002.
Okay. Yeah, this is old. That's old.
Yeah, it's old. So, and his oldest stuff.
He's a young buck when he said that.
Is the most disturbing. So, so the first one, the top one here, really think about that. Like, you have to really think, like, my justification for the theft of other people's land to give to people who are moving there, who have a particular ethnic identity, is that Arabs just don't know what to do with the land. They just like to live in open sewage. And Israelis like to build. That is really your mental model of how to think about the world. Right. And you're a conservative. Do you see Locke in this? Do you see anything in the Enlightenment tradition that conservatives supposedly are drawing upon to justify, you know, the American founding and what we believe in? No, this is like East Asian identity politics bullshit. This is, you are bad because you're Arab. This is racist.
People from China, they love me.
You know, like that has nothing to do. That is like completely detextualizes everything and just brings it into absolute totalitarian, like, views on other people because they have the wrong DNA.
Well, it's sort of like the we played last week. We played we showed the Josh Hammer tweets, and because he's been kind of showing up and all this, where he was talking about like Europeans have anti-Semitism embedded in their DNA, that type of stuff. And this is the type of thing, these types of comments are what are making actual anti-Semitism come out. It's because you're blaming people on things that just like, it's not like, I don't have any direct animosity towards like Jewish people at all, but you're constantly just being like, You have anti-Semitism embedded in your DNA. If you step out of line, you're an anti-Semite, all this stuff. And then it just becomes like, is there some sort of cabal that's not allowing me to talk? Like that's the thing that kind of starts to grow in people in the same way that when the left was just calling everybody racist, then all of a sudden you have and just blaming straight white men on everything. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm a Nazi. Like it becomes that thing where you're like, you're turning me into the thing that you're telling me I shouldn't be.
Which is the thing that actually Tucker Carlson mentions as the goal of the people who are calling you an anti-Semite is to make you into
podcast.
He's saying how destructive that is. Second to that, his criticism of Fuentes was actually the Western view, the Christian view, is that your DNA does not decide your destiny, and that doesn't decide your moral worth. Now, read this tweet from Ben Shapiro and tell me that he doesn't believe exactly that when it comes to the people he doesn't like. Right? This is the so-called anti-identitarian type. Right, when he plays identitarian politics whenever he wants to. And like this is it's the same thing as the woke movement. They can be racist in saying that black people can't be racist and therefore can be, you know, say shitty things about white people. And at the same time, you can be Ben Shapiro and say white people shouldn't be racist, but I can be racist against Arabs. And then I'm white when I want to be and I'm not white when I don't want to be. You know, like all these kind of things. These are the things that are driving this movement. You need to confront and deal with your contradictions. Otherwise, it's going to continue to grow.
Well, they're unique and they mutate. So he can be whatever he wants to be.
It's a unique hate that mutates. Yeah.
Which leads to a lot of contradictions in it.
Yeah. I do go back to that, which for anyone who doesn't understand the reference is when Candace debated the Rabbi
Barclay.
Barclay. And he said anti-Semitism is the unique hate that mutates. And so it's basically they can call it whatever they want to call it. They can... like they have no set definition for it. And I think we talked about it at the time, the self fulfilling ice cream cone or self-licking ice cream cone, where it's just like you like make up so much bullshit and piss so many people off that they become the thing that you're accusing them of. And then you get to go, see? They're all anti-Semitic.
And then you just call everything a blood libel or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it's just like, I remember in that particular debate, she called Rabbi Shmuley's daughter a hag. And they're like, that is a long-standing anti-Semitic trope. He was like, I've never heard of that in my life, that being an anti-Semitic trope. I was like, it just keeps growing. It's
I was just thinking of The Witcher, which is maybe not helping the case since it's a Polish thing. But. That's
funny. It's frustrating. It's the frustrating thing about all of this. Is there another one that you put here too?
Yeah, transfer is not a dirty word. This is about ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
Right, so this is a churching up. Synagoguing up the word ethnic cleansing into transfer, right? Meaning if we move people off their land, that's just transferring them. It's not stealing their land. It is transferring them. It's like, and this is from 2003. Once again, the early writings of Ben Shapiro are unhinged apologetics for the worst things that Israel as a state is doing to the Palestinians.
And the hard part about all of this, because you just see the straight animosity that exists in these tweets from people like Ben Shapiro and Josh Hammer. There's more on the whole, like him using Jews as like JOOS. And he has like tons of tweets that are like that. If you just searched on there, you could just see all of these like old tweets of him just blaming people for whatever anti-Semitism. And he always spells Jews JOOS when he does that.
Yeah. To make it like you're an unhinged conspiracy theorist. Like that's how you would say
that kind of thing.
You're dumb. You don't ask, well, Jew. Yeah, is that something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating to see that, especially because he was the guy that was going on college campuses debating against identitarian beliefs from when the left was doing it. And you also have this frustrating thing where you now have a lot of these people where they're just like, how dare anybody platform Nick Fuentes? I wouldn't dare debate him and give him a platform. It's just like, yeah, but you were completely fine debating Maoists.
Yeah.
You were fine debating, like you're fine debating all these people, but like Nick Fuentes is the guy that you're not willing to platform. Like these other people have like straight up genocidal beliefs too, but you're fine with I'm not saying Nick has genocidal beliefs. Like, I don't think he really does necessarily.
Maybe he does.
Big Stalin fan.
We will only
Stalin fan apparently.
We only find out what is a joke and what is his actual beliefs by actually exposing him to discourse, mm-hmm. right? Where he isn't just talking to a new camera and interacting with his chat. Rather, he has to actually sit down against somebody and debate his beliefs. Mm-hmm. Then we can actually find out what he actually thinks, and we can discourse about that. We've just been spending 8 years saying that sunlight is the best disinfectant to bad ideas.
Except for now. Now
all of a sudden it isn't. Yeah. We turned platform from a noun about a thing you stand on to talk about into a verb for some reason. And now even Mark Levin is using it as a verb.
Well, and so there was this Republican Jewish Coalition conference that happened, and we got some wild things from all the greatest hitters in this space. So here's Mark Levin talking about the need for censorship.
Hitler admirers, Stalin admirers, Jew haters, American haters, Churchill haters, you're damn right we're going to cancel them and deplatform them. It's called the market system. They don't have a lifetime job like a bureaucrat who we're going to protect. And if they're your friend, there's something wrong with you. No Hitler admirer, Holocaust denier, platformer should be anybody's friend, as a matter of fact. You don't get to wrap your psychotic, mental, unhinged, Nazi, Klan, jihadist bullshit around American patriotism. You don't get to claim you're MAGA and America first when you're lining up with the Marxists and the Islamists and Hamas and the terrorists. That's not America first. That's sick.
Yeah, so his argument is because you agree with the left on a particular foreign policy issue that therefore you're not America first. Is it really we're doing guilt by association now too?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you can't be friends with them.
Yeah, they're the bad guys.
Yep.
I get it. I can agree with Mark Levin on some things and then disagree with other things. Holy cow, I'm a free American.
Yeah, he has some good views on the Constitution. He's written some good books on that.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. What are we doing here, guys? And like specifically in the whole point that, yeah, we're going to deplatform you. To the degree to what he's talking about is, I'm not going to watch your show. Fine. Yeah, don't watch your show. Okay, fine.
Nobody's asking for that.
Yeah, no. Well, good. What we're talking about is what we're going to do is rather than discourse with you like a fellow American, we're going to try to intimidate you. We're going to try to use our ability to project financial power in order to isolate and prevent you from gaining an audience in the first place. Like those sorts of things to prevent speech are supposed to be in our values of free speech, right? Those are the things that we were arguing against censorship regime before we realized to the degree to which government was the central puppet holder of everything. We had there was suspicion, but we didn't have the evidence, right? Until we really had the GEC release, the Twitter files, things like that. When those things were still mostly understood as a corporate entity doing these things and by choice, we were making the argument at the time, the conservatives were making the argument that free speech, as much as it is a limit on government prevention of government laws from keeping speech, it's also a social value that our ideas have, our ability to speak actually really matters, and us as a society valuing other perspectives and then vetting them out and then discarding bad ones and then learning from them might actually be a good thing, you know, as articulated by John Stuart Mill on Liberty, that famous work of American founding influence documents. Those things are were what we thought we believed. And it's interesting to watch these guys just totally shed that off in this moment and decide, oh, well, none of that matters now. Because, you know, guy said bad thing about Winston Churchill. He's not even American. Why do we care so much about what people say about Winston Churchill?
For some reason, we have this like religious inclination towards Winston Churchill, which was kind of the point of what Daryl Cooper was getting at in that, is just kind of breaking that illusion.
Yeah.
But we have this thing.
And
of
also just seeing the reaction kind of proved his point.
Yeah, it's just like, what is happening? It's like there's like some weird cult like phenomenon that's happening right now.
I didn't realize we were worshiping Winston Churchill in America.
I didn't until then.
There's a difference. There's a difference between, hey, he's an important historical figure, and he was our ally in World War II.
The Church of Latter-day Saints.
So was Stalin.
Yeah, exactly. So was Stalin.
Actually, I want to pull up. I'm going to go back and pull up. But
can I make one more note about Levin? Yeah. Where he says we can deplatform because it's a, what did he say, a market system?
The free
system?
Market system, yeah.
Well, wouldn't a free market be like the audience deciding who they watch?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I just pulled back up the Ben Shapiro. Let's just take a look at the comments under the... It's very clear that the viewership on the Ben Shapiro video is largely people hate watching it.
Mm.
The comments are just debate him. He'd gladly do it. Debate him. We're all noticing now. Mm. Get back to work, Matt Walsh. Went straight to the comments and was not disappointed. Nick is going to go nuclear on Ben tonight, right? Like all the top comments on these videos, but you see it on the tweets of everybody. Dave Smith just debated Crowder on his show, and all of the comments under Crowder's show are all just everybody being completely supportive of Dave Smith, right? So you're seeing this where you have these figures that are kind of part of conservative ink or, you know, whatever you might want to call it, and they're not getting the same level of traction that these newcomers are getting right now. And then there's like these death throes that are happening in the moment.
That's interesting. So you think it's like a pushback territorial like thing, but then their own audiences want to see engagement on this issue.
Yeah, specifically on these issues and to debate these people, things like that. They want to see the actual freedom of ideas flow through, but they're like unwilling to do it. And then when the people demand these debates happen, they're just like, oh, all the traction that they're getting are Qatari bots. You know? And we just can't. Tucker Qatarlson, you know, which is what Mark Levin keeps calling him. And that I think that's the thing that is getting everybody, especially young people in general, are just way more internet savvy. So they're seeing, they know the nature of these things, I think, a lot better than the older crowd do. Mm-hmm. So they're watching all these kind of old heroes of the conservative time kind of fall apart, and they're just like, wow, this is all kind of built up on bullshit in a lot of ways. And these people don't really have any substance to them anymore. They're just repeating like the same talking points over and over again. And then they can't really contend with the new guys that are rising up. And then the young people are drifting to the new guys rising up because there's a lot more vitalism in their arguments. There's a lot more like actual debate and argumentation that's happening. It's a lot more free flowing and openness to ideas that seems to be happening here, where these people just are not.
I think you're right. That's a good assessment.
I want to get to our next big hitter from the Republican Jewish Coalition. Lindsey Graham had some things to say. We're big Lindsey Graham fans here, right? This is a Lindsey Graham fan podcast.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I just want to say I feel good about the Republican Party. I feel good about where we're going as a nation. We're killing all the right people and we're cutting your taxes. Jesus.
Yeah, and then I got one more clip before we jump in here, another short one.
But if you ever run for office as a Republican and you embrace this weird shit, we're going to beat your brains out.
The weird shit's being the groiperism.
Is he drunk? Like, I want to say it again.
I think he's just gay.
Well, he's definitely. I mean, both can be true. Both things could be true.
Usually, that's just not the way I've usually heard him talk. So he sounded a little tipsy.
Know, he's with all his funders.
So he's a little frischnicken. You know what I mean?
I mean, he probably got paid a good $7,000 for this appearance, and he was partying it up in the back.
Yeah. So this is a Christian, the Christian Party, the party of the Christians. About, you know, What did he say? Cutting your taxes and killing all the right people.
We're killing all the right people and cutting your taxes.
Wow.
That's the
platform. Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah. America, brother.
Yeah. That sounds like America first.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it meant.
And then I want to move to one more. Representative Andy Fine had a big
Randy.
Randy?
Not Andy.
Did I say Andy?
Yeah.
I thought I heard Randy, but
whatever.
Let's fight over it.
I think it should be Andy.
Yeah, he looks like an Andy. He looks like
he looks more like an Andy than a Randy.
He looks like Jabba the Hutt, as he looks like. Yabashuga Han Solo.
I think that's anti-Semitic.
I don't think Jabba was a stand-in for Jews.
I don't know.
What's a mafia?
Can't talk about that. That's the one mafia you can't talk about, right. Bennett.
Yeah. No, we're only allowed to talk about the Italians.
Yeah,
that's why we made movies about them.
Mamma Mia.
all right, here is Randy Fine talking about the Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes debate issue.
But I'm here for the kids down here because it's easy to talk about anti-Semitism on the left. I want to talk about the dark force rising on our side.
I just want to notice, like, especially for the audio.
Do you want to notice?
I'm noticing some things, particularly for the audio only listeners. It has a crowd pan out and there's just a ton of people in front of the podium.
Young people.
All holding out Tucker is not MAGA signs. Mm. So this is a pretty big organized effort right here that's going on.
No, I wish they'd make an argument.
I thought all those students went to Michael's after school and made all those posters themselves.
Yeah. With the exact same font. Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiple speakers have talked about the rise of anti-Semitism on the right. But it is not enough to speak in platitudes or generalities about the fight. We must call evil by its name. 5 years ago, if I was talking to my father, who's watching, hi dad, if I was talking to my father at 8:59 p.m. at night, he would say, Randy, I gotta go. Tucker Carlson's gonna be on. But make no mistake, today, Tucker Carlson is the most dangerous anti-Semite in America. He has chosen to take on the mantle of leader of a modern day Hitler Youth, to broadcast and feature those who celebrate the Nazis, those who call for the extermination of Israel,
you're full of
to defend
shit
Hamas,
today.
To even criticize President Trump for stopping Iran's nuclear ambitions. Friends, make no mistake. Tucker is not MAGA.
What a non-inspiring speech, leader.
I was just about to be.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
Golf clap.
Maybe it was better in the room, but it did not come through in the audio.
I don't think it was.
I don't know.
I'm watching body language of these kids. They're like, how much do we get paid to be here?
$7,000. Unfortunately, it was split between all of them.
Classic.
Gonna get canceled for that one. So, okay, so let me be clear. Randy Fine is, I am not impressed with your oratory skills, nor am I really impressed with your takes on this whole thing. I disagree with you on foreign policy. Does that make me an anti-Semite?
Yes.
Like, is there an actual argument any of these people are going to make? All they do is call names and just spew out bullshittery, right? I mean, like, what's going on here?
Well, this is what I mean. It mutates. Yep. They can say whatever they want to say it is. So you not agreeing with their foreign policy. Yes, they can. They will say that.
And then if you say it mutates, that's anti-Semitic because that implies like shape-shifting tropes.
But we're quoting a rabbi.
Doesn't matter.
So my, at least a part of this being like, I mean, is there no room for good faith criticism within the right wing anymore? As long as it's on your, I mean, like this is you're acting like leftists. All you're doing is throwing out the worst kind of leftists, the most terrible kind, the kind that are so wrapped in their emotions of their identity that they can't see anything else. What are we doing, guys?
Well, and that's the thing is the thing about this is that there are a lot of folks within the Jewish community that have that same type of feeling that a lot of folks in like the Black community have when it comes to historical slavery. And then Jews have the whole diaspora situation. So they are kind of this like tightly bonded group of people that have this identity that's wrapped into this thing. And then so the current symbol right now is just general Zionism and the Israeli state and things like that. So anything that kind of goes against that, all of a sudden it's just like,
what's
you hate my
people. What's the symbology there?
What's the symbology there?
It's like, well, it just becomes this thing where like, you hate my people. You are a terrible person because you hate my people. You want me to die because you don't want this thing. And it's just like, you can't have a rational conversation with somebody like that. It becomes impossible. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many young people are kind of just like, I'm done like having to kowtow and cater to all of this nonsense, whether it be like the gay trans stuff, the Black BLM stuff, the Jewish Israel stuff, like all of those are the same thing. And I think a lot of people are just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done with this stuff.
Right.
I think that that's where a lot of this is going right now. And then to the extreme, it's sort of like we had a Jeremy Carl in here, the young kid that talked to.
He's a knower.
He's a knower. He was talking about that. Is like there is an extreme of people and young people where they take it so far that there becomes an actual hatred of those different groups because they're kind of being trained to have that hatred. It's like a Pavlovian, like beating the dog type of thing where it's just like, okay, fine, I hate you now. Like it becomes that thing.
Yeah. It's a tragedy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You what you're touching on is something that they don't realize they're creating the very monster that they are predicting.
Do you? I see. That's where I disagree. I think they do.
You think they're intentionally?
Yes. I very much think they are intentionally doing it because then they get to see, we've been telling you this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is an absolute intentional thing.
Sure. And this is why we need to send more money to Israel. This is why we need these free speech prohibitions on college
campuses. Like, I'm serious about it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It could be. The big question to me is I don't think they're winning because of this. And I think they know they're losing.
I agree with that.
And they keep doubling down on their losing strategy because they're so emotional. They can't see the results of what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're not keyed into these questions.
Well, and then they look at it like, this is what happened in Hitler. It just started to rise and rise and rise. Mm-hmm. And part of it is because like, it's because you're being so annoying about it. like that's
not,
like
not the, Hitler.
Don't
now.
Use. Don't
like
use
now.
That
it's
word.
Happening in that.
Like, all, in like the, it, I think that's what happens across like in a lot of these historical situations where you have disparate group of people. They get like really annoying about their like group identity, and it just starts to annoy, and it
like
festers
vegans.
And it festers. It's like people being anti-veganism. We're just like, stop. I get it. You're a biker. You need your bike lanes. Okay. It becomes that thing where people are just like, I'm done hearing about your shit. I got my own problems. You know, like stop
I'm gonna
doing
eat
all
this steak
stuff
in front of you.
Yeah. Like, but it's just a natural thing that is a part of human psychology. And sometimes it grows into very deadly problems that manifest in historical situations. Mm-hmm. And like this thing could manifest into something very bad, but I think that they're the ones feeding the fire for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm only going to say this because I've been reading our comments and people love to take you out of context when you say that sort of thing. So what you're saying is that there's a different, you're describing how majority groups feel when minority groups are get really like on and on and on about their grievances. And at some juncture, there is a dude, lay off a little bit, right? This is not going to be cool. And eventually, if you keep that on, there's going to be actual resentment that builds up over time.
Yeah, like I don't want there to be resentment to this group or that group or that group. Like I don't want that to happen. But those groups are often the ones feeding the flames for that. They're like, or fanning the flames for the resentment to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. Because like, and it just becomes this like vicious resentment cycle that happens because it's just like, because it's like, well, because of this historical oppression of this, that, or the other, therefore we need this X policy. And then that X policy hurts Y people. Mm-hmm. And then those people get really upset. And then something happens and there's like, see, that's why we need X policy. And it just grows into this thing that continues to go over and over again.
Right. And that's the answer to that is discourse, right? The answer to that is discourse that confronts with the other side and then in good faith negotiates these questions. Right. A good example of this. Do you guys see the what was it? Steven Crowder at the barbershop.
Oh, yeah.
Did a couple of years ago and he did one recently. It's interesting to watch the black community in that discourse about things like reparations with another person, right, who's not from, and then like contending with that and contending with the pushback that happens when white people hear that, right? That the insulation of it, the subgroup insulation that isn't interested in larger social questions, as we're debating large social questions, results in a zero-sum game with the larger group, as opposed to a discourse about the issue, where then you have to give and take, and you have to actually deal with the arguments and concerns of the other party.
You have to make compromises, and not everybody gets exactly what they want, but you can try to make some sort of beneficial agreements between the different parties, right? But the problem, but now where everybody's becoming super bifurcated even further, which is weird because you would think like with the dawn of the internet, people would become more.
It's both and.
Yeah.
It's both and because you actually see more of your opposition side, but it's like the most unhinged version of it. So those were the clips that go viral. Therefore, that's what you see. Therefore, you think every school teacher is a purple haired person trying to train your kids.
Well, that's obvious.
That's not true. That's a minority of teachers. That all teachers are that way. But it's understandable why people get to that conclusion. Well, what we're not talking about
is a loud minority.
But and that doesn't mean there's no influence. It doesn't mean it's not a bad thing. No, I'm not trying to dismiss it. I'm only trying to say it.
No, I'm just
internet
pointing out the parallel.
Yeah, the internet algorithm gives you two things: your echo chamber and the loudest, piercing, shrillest echo chamber next door that you hate the most, because those are the things that drive clicks and views and comments.
And that is often the thing, is when we're talking about individuals, individual commentators and influencers and the like, most of who they are becomes defined by the clips that are made of them.
Yes.
And so you're not usually getting a full context picture unless you are a general fan or like a super fan of that person that consumes a much wider array of their content. So then it becomes very easy to other various people, because like you just cut the clip at the correct point and just like, oh, this is the outrageous thing that this person says.
And that was a strategy that used to work really well. Like it used to end careers. Media Matters was really important at a certain juncture in the Obama era. But something changed. Something fundamentally changed. And now people watch clips that are like, that might be what he said, but yeah, that might be out of context. Like that, I think, doesn't happen all the time, but it happens more often.
People are more savvy. Like they're more savvy to the internet. It'll be the same thing with AI. With AI deepfake videos and stuff, you know, people will start to be like, oh, that's going to be an AI video. Like,
you mean the video of the baby Loch Ness monster that I found is not true?
I'm sorry to say I'm doubtful of it.
Don't crush my dreams, Kyle. God damn it.
But it'll be one of those things where, you know, people will become a lot more savvy to understanding what's real and what's fake. And unfortunately, new technologies will come out and people will kind of have to contend with it for a few years and be like, oh, it's crazy, you know, but then everybody's just going to stop believing everything they see, you know.
Eventually.
Yeah.
So the last part of this that really touched off this week was the Heritage Institute fallout. So the Heritage Institute, if you live under a rock, you don't know what it is the biggest kind of longstanding centerpiece of conservatism as a think tank in Washington, D.C. Really important for the formulation of conservative ideas, policy, broad perspective in these moments. So what happened was there was a response video made of... It's interesting because they were trying, it appears that they're trying to be proactive, right? They were trying to get out ahead, and they were saying, oh, are we, the president, Kevin Roberts, put out a video that's now deleted. You can find clips of it, but I'm not going to play that part. But basically what he says is, Tucker Carlson's a friend. People are saying that we should be distanced from him. We're never going to do that. We don't cancel people. We like free speech, that sort of thing. And then something happened.
Honestly, I was surprised when I saw that original video. I didn't expect Heritage to have the cojones for that.
I've made this point before. Republicans are much quicker to sacrifice their own than Democrats ever are. Democrats have some cases where they'll do that, but they will.
Cuomo.
Depends on the issues and stuff.
3 years later, they'll rehabilitate that guy. Throw him right back in. You know what I mean? Like, they do not ever allow someone who does something outside their scope I'm sure there are lines and they're just not frequently crossed. Maybe they're better at keeping discipline.
I think you're not allowed to ascend. I think it's much probably more difficult to ascend in there, and then those types of people just kind of stay put in their like defined position where it's a lot more decentralized in the Republican space.
But the Republicans, if you step out of line, that you will be canceled and disowned forever, and you never come back. Like, you're just gone. forever. And that's never. I've always observed that Republicans have been one of the weakest parts of Republican culture. Democrats, you know, they don't stand. They do stand by their own often. We'll defend people. Anthony Weiner.
Jay Jones
is sending
perfect recent example.
Yeah, Jay Jones, but yeah, not really getting a good pushback from his from Democratic establishment or power figures. But Anthony Weiner is literally sending dick pics to underage kids. For
twice.
Years. For twice.
There was like two big things. Well,
twice
like,
that we know
on like
of.
Two different elections.
Exactly.
Well, but he got caught
just
in
that
like,
we know of.
he got caught in two different elections, it came up.
Yeah. And they just still platform the guy and still have him around. He's, you know, I mean, like, so this is just, I was like, wow, maybe we're turning a corner. And then boom, apology video activates. So something happened. Oh, you know. I can guess what happened. Some donors got upset and then started threatening him. So then he had to put out an apology video that we can look at real quick, 2 minutes in.
I want to speak plainly, both as president of the Heritage Foundation and also as an American who understands the urgency of this moment. Leadership requires owning the moments where we fall short, then using them to reset, refocus, and recommit. I talked about this today, as you may have seen, during our Heritage All-Staff Town Hall. I'm so grateful for my amazing colleagues. My use of the phrase venomous coalition was a terrible choice of words. It caused justified concern, especially among friends and allies who know how seriously Heritage has fought and continues to fight against the rise of anti-Semitism.
What?
Everyone has the responsibility to...
Are we aware that what did he say? Venomous
coalition
is a anti-Semitic trope.
Did you know in The Hag, if you get hit by if in The Witcher, if you get hit by a hag, you get poisoned?
It's a reference to poison damage.
Poison damage.
Yeah.
Help me.
Wait, poison damage in like any video game? Is that a reference to...
That's just The Witcher. I don't know about any video game.
I'm getting too hot again. This is... Okay, help me out here. In what world is this not a hate that mutates moment? Come on, guys.
All right. If you're based in reality, it's not.
But... Yeah, so that's that. And then they did this town hall thing, and this is a click from the town hall. It's an example of the struggle. Oh, don't do this one. Do the other one, Kyle. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the shorter one. This is a short example of the sort of thing that happened at the town hall. I've watched a lot of it. And go ahead and play.
If someone is that nutty, and I know you're too young to care about, I'm a boomer. World War II is a big thing to me, but... My God, if you could be that wrong about the World War II, you are wrong about everything on planet Earth.
So,
is this referencing the Daryl Cooper?
Daryl Cooper and so the Nick Fuentes praising Hitler.
Well, also I think about Tucker saying we shouldn't have dropped the nukes.
Yeah, too. There's another one. Yep, you can't question the orthodoxy of everything that happened in World War II was necessarily a good thing, and everybody who was involved was a hero that only did good things. Mm-hmm.
Despite not being able to win re-election. That's always the one thing about Churchill for me, where it's just like, he wasn't well-liked by his own people. Like he couldn't win re-election afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like they wanted him out. They wanted to move on.
But you know, this is an interesting thing. This is like, this dogma has to be contended with because you have another generation that doesn't have your boomer sentimentalities, right? And then you're exercising your power to... make this whole struggle session an apology video. Now you got to roll back all your collaborations with Tucker Carlson, the, you know, probably the most influential conservative person in media, all because you can't grapple with the fact that another generation younger than you doesn't have your sentimentality about these things and looks at it more as a historical phenomenon than a religious precept. Mm-hmm. And that is the danger of the moment, because that feeds Fuentes's whole thing, right? At that point, you're now demonstrating exactly the thing when he says that there is this Jewish influence that keeps us from being able to discourse about things that we should be able to discourse about. everything is playing into their, you keep playing into their hands, man.
Well, that's the thing too, where a lot of young men, they've been gravitating towards a lot of these figures over the last 10 years. Like the prime three, maybe even put four, Trump is kind of an example of this too. But like the prime three are Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate, and Nick Fuentes. Those seem to be the ones that have really captured the young male attention these days. And there's kind of a similar theme that exists in all those, is they're is that they're saying kind of uncomfortable, anti-dogmatic things in the moment. With Jordan Peterson, it was a lot of the like the trans stuff in college campuses, but then also layered in with a kind of an existential realism and psychology, and kind of his rise and his lecture series is around that, which really grabbed a lot of young men. With Andrew Tate, it's a lot of like a biological realism of kind of relationships between men and women, and not really being like super dogmatic about it. Just like, this is how it is, you know, like that kind of a thing, which I think really attracted a lot of young men. And then with Nick here, it's a lot of like identity realism, in a sense, you might want to call, or I guess ethnic realism, race realism, I guess.
Political maybe. Realism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, like, yeah. Like, it's just kind of like how that people do cult up in identities for various things, whether it be religious, ethnicity, those types of things. And everybody just kind of, and like these kind of core figures all identified those things. And I think it really attracted a lot of young men for varying reasons at different times over the last 10 years. And you know, they all kind of went through their cancel campaigns at the time. You know, Jordan Peterson took the pills and went to Daily Wire. Andrew Tate got sex trafficking. and now Fuentes here. So it's just kind of interesting to see where I feel like there's a craving there for young men where they're kind of looking for that, you know, to maybe do a callback to an old clip of ours that went popular. They're looking for that Socrates figure who's like going against the dogma of the time that then gets pilloried and is called the enemy and is on their like quote unquote villain arc.
So this
in the
is
moment.
This is the three horsemen of the Zoomer apocalypse. Yes. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. It's something like, which means we're probably getting a fourth.
We need a fourth one coming.
This is right, revelation.
Yeah, yeah.
These are three of the four horses.
Kyle is pretty pale, so that would work.
I'm the pale horse.
That's what they call them, ladies.
But that's where, like, when I'm just looking at where young men are going and what they're gravitating to, that seems to be the common, you know, psychological vehicle that I'm seeing with it.
I think that makes sense. There's something there. It seems to me that there is a question, especially, okay, so the steel man this side of what these folks want. There is a question that I would have loved that Tucker Carlson should have asked. And I think he might even admit that maybe he could have, and maybe he could have done it better. I would love for him to have talked about race realism and his objection to J.D. Vance based upon the fact that he's married to an Indian woman. Right? I would have liked discourse there. They never got there. I actually think they spent more time on Nick's biography than they probably should have. Right? Just offering friendly criticism. That would have been a good place to get to, because if anything, it distinguishes him from the rest of Conservative Inc. When you might have watched the Fuentes interview and got like the sense like, oh, he's just like a conservative with somewhat more nationalist and more radical views.
Something I'll add to that, though, too, is like I think a lot of people wanted maybe too much from the first sit down that they have together. I was listening to Dave Smith talking about his recent episode with Nick, too,
right,
where Dave was saying, like, I'm expecting this to be an ongoing conversation over multiple episodes. So we're starting out with kind of the origin background stories and some things like that. But we're going to be kind of podcast partners, in a sense, where we're going to do each other's shows from time to time, and this is going to be an ongoing relationship. And I kind of expect, you know, whether it be PBD, Dave Smith.
Was that the episode he did with Tucker, Dave Smith, that you're talking about?
I heard him talking about this with Ian Carroll and Clint Russell on a podcast I was listening to on the way in. But I think he probably said it on that, too.
I was going to say, he did just have Tucker on. I don't remember that part of it.
Yeah, so but I would suggest that, that's a place we need to get to. We need to get to a place where we're actually having a conversation about this to temper test this whole idea. And I suspect... it'll become repulsive to your average listener to think about it. Like, I don't like this guy because he married the wrong woman. You know, like, I don't think that's going to be a very compelling argument. So what I suspect is that Fuentes will back off into, well, I do think there are certain aspects of race that are important to our society, and kind of go back on that argument. And then he just kind of looks shitty for attacking a guy based upon his wife, or attacking a guy's wife. and her identity rather than his ideas.
Like, it's going to be one of those things where on his own show, where he doesn't have to talk with other people, he's probably just going to be more radical, more jokey, more trolly, those types of things. And it's going to go more and more and more the longer that he's kind of isolated in his own bubble. But the more that you bring him in, the more that he probably... I think we'll just naturally start to moderate his crowd a lot more.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that's what Tucker Carlson's play is. I suspect that that is the best thing for America. Another one, like his comments on Hitler, right? And Stalin. What's that about? Let's talk about it. Yeah. Is he just like an admirer of great men of history sort of thing? What is it?
Can
we have a discourse about that?
In the episode that Tucker went on Dave Smith's show, Tucker was actually critical of himself for not like pushing back on that point specifically. I remember that one. So I do think there are some things that he would like to redo, essentially. But yeah, like Kyle's saying, like hopefully this is something that they talk about more, and they do have the chance to have disagreement, but like without needing to cancel each other, essentially.
Well, I think it's an important discussion that Fuentes needs to have with the public so that he's exposed to all of those alternative points of view that I'm sure he's familiar with, but has never gotten pressure on, right? It's a different thing when you're in your own little crowd doing your little jokes, but once you're out and trying to discourse with regular people and have an effect on our culture and our society, you have to then present those ideas in more palatable ways.
Well, just isolation is going to make you even more radical,
right?
Like you're just getting canceled and then you're just in your own little bubble that's just constantly growing because you're going to start to say more and more radical things naturally. Like,
right.
I think that's going to happen, especially after mass cancellation. Like, They came after his banks, you know.
So, and last one of the things here too is, and I think this was missing from all of the discourse here. It's really unfortunate. Is what I saw, and I mentioned this on our last podcast, but I want to mention it here too. I saw Tucker Carlson push Nick Fuentes on 2 points. One, it's legitimate to criticize a foreign country, of course. Like that's like I agree with them on that. But then pivot to, it is unchristian to attack people based upon their DNA. To hate people based upon their racial background. And what are we doing with that? And it is unfortunate he didn't go back to, so how do you justify your opposition to ethnic, you know, having a white majority country? What's your argument for that? What's your argument against interracial marriage? And like having that discourse in more high resolution. Maybe he gets to that later. But I saw him push on that. And what I saw was Fuentes backing off on the issue. That is a good thing. If you can turn the so-called Nazi into someone much more moderate, isn't that a good thing for anti-Semitism? Right?
No,
if you take
even,
someone
you
who's a racial essentialist and make them defend it, and then they kind of go like, well, you know, what I'm really making is a limited claim that's really much more narrow than that. Then you're saying, okay, now you're just Douglas Murray, right? And you're making the argument about the intellectual arc and the IQ relationship with race. And then you can have that discussion. But Jesus Christ, guys, like we're not doing this it's not working to, number one, to cancel the guidance. Two, it's not going to produce the kind of social outcome that you want.
It's clearly not working.
Yes.
Like that's, you know, that's just obvious from the numbers that we're seeing of his rapid growth. And, you know, I have people asking me about Nick Fuentes that I would have never thought would be asking me about Nick Fuentes.
Yeah.
You know, like he's burst into the mainstream now.
Mm-hmm. I'm also,
now we have to contend with
that. I'm just shocked that they keep trying it. Like I think of so many examples in the last 5 years that it just has totally backfired. You got Rogan, you got Fuentes, you got Jordan Peterson, you got
you're broke!
That guy.
the Tates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it just has not worked anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think before Elon got Twitter, it was more successful.
Yeah.
Because you had the government backing it.
Yeah. But it since then, it's just like, you need to change your playbook.
But
having conversation, not by being like, well, now we need to eliminate the fox in the hen house sort of shit.
Due to Twitter and Rumble, largely, you know, they've allowed the conversation to fester in their eyes. Let's cover some of the election stuff, because a lot of the reasons why we wanted to cover this on the lead up to the election stuff is that this is a part of the narrative here is that there's a Republican civil war that is maybe making the Republicans unfocused on things that might be the reason why there's a bit of a fallout in this recent election.
Mm-hmm.
And then what that means for the midterms too is, you know, an ongoing conversation.
Right. And so I think the right way to frame this is when Donald Trump won, Was that a change on the degree of government like FDR changed the government? Yes or no? I think no, but I think a lot of people thought yes.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of people are operating as if the government has already changed when all that happens, you elected somebody. Mm-hmm. You actually have to change policy and procedure and staff to get the change that FDR did. And all the MAGA really did was get a guy into the White House. Right.
And the Republicans took the Senate and the House, but not by wide margins.
Not enough in the Senate to pass anything of substance, mm-hmm. right? This is why we have to do everything by omnibus and yes. these mad processes.
And why the whole filibuster thing is a point of conversation right mm-hmm. now.
Exactly. So what happened this week is the Virginia governor's race, one was won by a Democrat. They flipped that from a Republican. Virginia governor floats Republican to Democrat, but it is typically held more often by Democrats. The election margin was 16%, so it's a big Democrat swing. They won two state wins in Georgia, and they are both public service commissioner seats. And this is the first time since like the 90s that they've been able to win a public commissioner seat, much less both of them at the same time in Georgia. Georgia is a battleground state, so understand it in terms of it can flip either way. It's much more of a purple state than others. I think it's important to note that at least part of the steel manning of the argument that there is that the Republicans have like a bad brand right now or something like that is that Spanberger, who's a former CIA agent, note that, she's the VA Democrat governor now, candidate. It flipped several traditionally Republican leaning counties like Spotsylvania. That is a weird one. And Stafford. This is the first time Democrats have won that area since 1985.
Spotsylvania. It's like where Dracula's from. Or yeah. something. I don't know.
Dalmatian Dracula. All right. So they were able to keep the New Jersey governor's seat.
That took me a second. I give it a thumbs down.
Yeah.
I had to think about this Dalmatian Spotsylvania.
I got little kids, man. I got little kids.
Transylvania, is that where Dracula's a woman? Is that? Yeah.
So the New Jersey governor won by 15%. It kept it Democrat. Pennsylvania elected a new Democrat lower court justice. And then Mamdani won New York. And the Mamdani thing is interesting to the degree that he is a more radical former Democrat. That might be a signal in some ways, but I think it says more about the Democrats than anything else.
Yeah.
Let's get into the actual exit polling, and then I think it'll kind of demonstrate some of my points here. You know, would you mind bringing it up, Kyle?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm just sitting here enraptured by what you're saying.
Yeah.
I failed.
He's still thinking about Dalmatian.
I was thinking about I was looking for other like Transylvania puns in my head in the moment, and they just weren't quite clicking there. But
all right, yeah, so let's go through this. This is a CNN poll. It was actually a big collaboration, CNN, APP, and a whole bunch of other ones. Breaking down.
Are you wanting the mayor race?
We'll start out with New York, yeah. So go ahead and go down. That's just like male, female. Yeah, of course, chicks vote Democrat.
Classic.
By a race. There's a lot of people making noise about Latinos moving towards Democrat Mamdani. I'm not totally surprised by that, at least especially in New York, for reasons that will become clear later. But you can see, you know, that he pretty much won every racial demographic except for white. I assume they're counting.
It's not
Jews
even that big
white.
Of a. It's not even
it's
that big 1% of a margin
difference.
Mm-hmm. If we're talking Cuomo, because 8% went towards our commie brother with the red hat. I don't know. He's not a commie, but it's just it's funny.
Probably is.
He's dressed like Zangief from Street Fighter.
Yeah, you know? he just wears a weird hat. You know.
All right, keep going. All right. Color versus white. Gender by race. Keep going. That's less interesting.
Age looks pretty big.
Yeah, the youth vote going towards Mamdani. Not surprising. But, you know, there was, of course, a lot of noise about Trump winning the youth vote. But this is New York City. So, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's also he's a very good social media guy. Like, mm-hmm. he's going to be hitting the young people as well. And also he himself is very young. He's like my age.
Right. And the socialism attack on him doesn't work as well because, you know. Yeah. Young people don't have memories of the USSR.
Well, and Cuomo killed all their grandparents. So.
Yeah, exactly.
so they couldn't give them the good lessons about the old times.
Yeah, keep going, Kyle.
Yeah.
Age barriers, keep going.
Do you have an education background?
Education's interesting. So, of course, this is a typical thing for socialists and far left-winging. Getting a majority of bachelor's degrees is interesting.
Just another reason to abolish colleges is... obviously, they're breeding socialists. Mm-hmm. education, college educated. Yeah, it's like, it is just the more liberal candidate, like the things that we normally see as indicators of right versus left, the more liberal candidate got more on the more typical left wing.
Right. This would not be surprising to any pollster, mm-hmm. other than the fact that Mamdani's just happens to be more radical. Yeah, white college, he got the most out of that. Mm. Keep going down.
Party ID.
Yeah, Cuomo actually winning independence is interesting.
Well, Cuomo also got 73% of Republicans.
Yeah, the other went to Silva. Right. So read this vertically. Yeah. Right. So this is of Republicans, Cuomo got 73% of Republicans.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like Republicans went more for Cuomo than they did for what's his name?
Wait, that's guessed. And when we get to the MAGA part here, mm-hmm. it'll be clear. But Donald Trump pretty much said vote for Cuomo. Mm-hmm. So ideology, very liberal, 84%, right? That's not surprising. But the total for ideology, so Cuomo became the conservative candidate, ironically, right? And he won most of the moderates. So
good conservative man, Cuomo. Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the total amount, I mean, it's Mamdani pulled together a lot of new voters and a lot of liberal voters who otherwise wouldn't vote.
You know, kind of less than 30,000 went to on the income side, there's less than $30,000 income went to Cuomo.
Yep.
But then everybody else went for, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting that the socialists got the majority of the highest income earners.
That is interesting in itself, huh? Mm-hmm. Is there any other things you want to
keep going down, yep.
Don't they know he's
where are the gays at?
Yeah, where the gays at?
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, 81% for Mamdani.
Yeah, and it kind of washes out for the other ones. How long have you, of course, but I don't know why, okay, wait, go back up to that. Why would you guess that Cuomo, who is, you know, otherwise a liberal Democrat, wouldn't be able to get the gay, lesbian, bisexuals, and transgenders? I would suspect what we're looking at here is an interesting measure of that community. That community is more likely to be politically radical and therefore would vote Mamdani. So that's a way to understand. That's something you can get out of that.
Yeah, they're willing to chop their dicks off. Right. Of course, they're going to be more radical. What are we talking about?
So how long have you lived? Of course, yeah. So less than 5 years, he wins overwhelmingly. So the immigrant population is definitely, and like the people who have moved to New York recently are more likely to do it. Cuomo gets
that's one of the more interesting ones to me is the newcomers in New York are way more Mamdani than people who have kind of lived under Cuomo.
And you would think like the machine politics would be something that the locals would dislike more.
Yeah.
You know, and other people would be more interested in stability, but maybe not. Yeah. Hmm. Keep going.
I also just think of like how fresh it is for someone who's only lived there for 5 years. Like what happened during COVID.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's true too.
I.
So this first time voter, that this is your sign of voter registrants and people getting involved in politics. This is really important for energy. 66% won by Mamdani.
Yeah.
Right. That's really big. That probably is your explainer for the election and the margin on the election. It's adding new to the voting pool,
which was a very Trump-like thing in 2016. He got mm-hmm. a lot of new registered voters. Mm-hmm. I just remember that time period, how many people who had never voted for before were all about Trump in 2016.
So the condition of New York's economy, right? So Mamdani voters were more likely to say it was good than Cuomo voters.
Do you
think about that?
Yeah.
Not so good at 48%. So it's he's getting the raw totals on here, but it's interesting. The real important one is that Cuomo got more of the poor voting public, and
he was
more of the good voting.
He was public. Close and not so good. But do you think that's people like maybe not looking at what is, but like what they hope it's going to be?
No, it's usually people will usually answer not on ambition. They'll usually answer on how they're experiencing the economy. But if you go up, Kyle, the composite of the two, 60% to 30%, excellent, good, Mamdani. That tells you something about what's going on here, right? I mean, there's something like Mamdani is casting a vision of better future, like things like that people want, right? They want an active, big government in New York City. And it's not necessarily because they're not doing well. Right. That's the interesting thing. A lot of he won the majority of the most wealthy people in New York City.
Do you feel like Mamdani is almost like a luxury belief candidate where
there's something there to that.
There's kind of like, ooh, we like the new kind of young Indian guy, you mm-hmm. know, that's kind of he's kind of Obama like.
Yeah.
Is it kind of more so that than it is about anything else?
I think that it undermines like the desire for socialism is because the economy is doing so poorly. I'm not saying the economy is doing well, but I'm just saying that I'm not sure that actually is coming through in the poll here.
Well, he's like a he's like a walking representation of the melting pot of New York. He can do basically every accent.
Mm-hmm. True.
But this one on financial situation, this is interesting because it definitely is people who are falling behind, which is an interesting measurement, right? Is your family's financial situation getting ahead, holding steady, or falling behind? And he got 60% of that demographic.
It is interesting because when we did the Mamdani episode and Joe had asked us who would be our preference despite not liking either, mm-hmm. I had leaned towards Cuomo because I actually thought that just from an executive experience type of thing, I actually thought that he'd probably just on paper do better than Mamdani could. Yeah. And also I think Mamdani's policies will probably be way more disastrous. Although he's hitting the things I think better. He's better comms on getting his message out and mm-hmm. being like, I'm going to be the savior that fixes your problems, hope and change type of thing. Mm-hmm. Way better than Cuomo.
I think clear vision casting explains a lot of this election. Additionally to that, in the comments section, of course, hated what you had to say, but I said I would vote for Mamdani, and here's why, because I never got to explain why. The reason why is because every now and then, and then I heard this quote earlier.
Say it failed miserably?
Yeah. You need to have someone step up and do this. And they're like, oh, wait, politicians are liars. You just got to get that memory back in, you know?
I was actually thinking of it before you said that. I think I would have gone him just because I feel like we need like a more recent example to show it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. So the problem with that is like, I feel like we're just going to do that every other election. You know, like everybody, like we can't just being like, see, this is why socialism is bad every 4 years.
You know? Not that what we,
as long as it's over there and I'm over here, Kyle.
But the New York economy is important for America.
No, everyone's going to leave New York and spread that wealth around. We want the good guys moving to Bozeman and starting businesses here.
That's what's happening. All those people are just bringing their policies here. They're like, well, that didn't work. And then they just bring all the policies to like Texas and Montana.
I'm not sure that's true. We've actually seen in more red states become more red based upon outgrowth migration from New York and from California. Mm. Florida is a good example of that.
Yeah.
But
Florida is probably the best example.
Last lesson here. Look at this. Like family's financial situation. Holding steady is the majority of this at 60%, almost 60%, 59%. So if you look at the gray numbers underneath, that's the total amount. So that's the total amount of people saying when they're asked, how's your family financial situation going? 17% getting ahead, 59% holding steady, 22% falling behind. I don't think that's a sentiment measurement that says everything is so terrible right now because of the tariffs and because of all the things that therefore we're in like a bad financial place. It's not the right way to understand Mamdani. I don't suspect.
It does seem like, which is just the normal thing with politics all the time, there's the narratives that are going forward, and then people are trying to find whatever polling they can to be able to make it fit. Markets are the same way. You know, price action goes up and down in stocks or crypto or something like that. And then people will try to find the narrative, but like it's like, no, it's actually not the thing that everybody's trying to make it out to be. Like mm-hmm. it kind of feels that way.
We're trying to fit it into a narrative. All right. One reason for your vote to stop Trump or support Trump was 72%. That shows you people who voted. Because wow. Trump told
this
him
is
to.
The biggest Cuomo 72% of opinion. The Cuomo voters 73% strongly approve of Trump.
Yep. Yeah.
And so that's funny.
Strongly disapprove, of course, inverts on the other side from Mamdani.
Wow, that is funny.
Yeah. And look at the top numbers on that one too. So the strongly disapprove makes up 62% of the voting public total polled. Right. So Trump is enormously unpopular in
New York.
Not surprising.
Because it's liberal. Right.
Yeah. Right. So, come on, guys. We can't use this as a measurement to say how bad the Republican Party's doing or how bad the vibes are.
Well, that's kind of the thing about just all these elections, because the narrative is just like, oh, this is just going to show the Republicans are falling apart. They're losing everything. But like when I looked at the elections, I'm like, OK, a bunch of places that I kind of expected to go liberal went liberal.
Yeah,
I mean that's been kind of the nature of these elections. But then everybody's just blowing it up to being things like this has been a disaster for the Republicans. It just doesn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. Am I out of touch on that?
No, like, the macro story, at least in part, is there's something going on that is creating more energy. And if you will, I'll go into this. Okay, so what is the biggest headwind or tailwind predictor for success in a race? Period.
I don't know.
Incumbency.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right? So if you're an incumbent, you're more likely to win than if you're challenging an incumbent, almost always. And the numbers bound somewhere around 70%, 75%. There's a lot of data on this, and political scientists have looked at this a lot. Usually incumbents win, almost always.
And a lot of that is just name ID.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, it's also access to donors, access to power, therefore reliability. Donors tend to like reliability and knowing that you're going to win, more likely to win, you're more likely to attract more money, therefore get your name out, stuff like that. We know what there's one is even stronger that I found in researching this. It's being in a party who recently got out of power and the other party's now in power in D.C.
Yeah. 100%.
That is 80%, at least in the last 25 years. Anytime the Republicans win and it's the off-year election afterwards, the Democrats do really well. And it's inverse the other way. That is, I mean, so you have a lot of tailwinds here on an open seat, right? This isn't an incumbent mayor. So therefore, that whole variable goes down.
Not by his choice, but...
Yeah, exactly. And second, you have this phenomena of Democrat turnout. Cuomo being endorsed by Trump is more likely to become, you know, like, is more likely just to draw Republican votes and then get even more votes to vote for Mandani. Right? Even if he probably never had a chance to win the first place, just because the New York City is just so liberal. And then lastly, the luxury belief thing here. He got most of the, a bulk of the most wealthy people voting for him. So therefore, you know, it's not because they're poor and they want the successes of socialism. Go down one more, little bit more. We have a polling on Democratic Socialists. I think this is insightful for that. So a lot of people, of the people who said that they are Democratic Socialists, of course, 87% said they are Mamdani. 12% said they're Cuomo. So always be careful with polls. And then, of course, no is the bulk goes to Cuomo. And consider part of MAGA. 9% are from Mamdani. Right. So like that's an interesting one, right? Because those are just people who are most change oriented. They're voting for MAGA because they are they want the most amount of change in D.C. when they vote for Trump. And then they switch and they vote for Mandani. It's the same thing we saw with Ron Paul.
A lot of these people, too, probably were RFK people.
Mm.
And think like you're going to have kind of the more liberal crowd that was on the RFK train. And when they came in, they voted for Trump because of that partnership.
Yep.
And then a lot of those people I could very easily see being Mamdani voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so keep going now.
Are you a MAGA more? Republican?
Mm-hmm.
64% for Cuomo.
And I think the 33% just didn't get the memo that Trump wanted him to vote for Cuomo. I suspect that's probably what it is. But only 7% of the total amount is Republican MAGA, right? Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, and then that's pretty much it for that. We can go to Virginia from here.
Strongly favorable of the Democrat Party, but
so
yeah.
Long story short, I think my thesis is that Mamdani is more of a feature of elite opinion in New York City about change and like maximizing change candidate and maximizing clarity of vision, and then additionally things like he's a minority and he's brown and he's these things that
he checks all the DEI
thing.
Boxes too. Yes. That I think people like to check off on these elections.
Exactly. So let's go back up and then you can just flip it over to Virginia.
Go back up, yeah, where?
Go up to the very top and then you can flip it over to Virginia.
So I see what you wanted. Yeah. Virginia.
Okay, so Virginia is a better case example for this question of are Republicans doing well? Note the male-female breakdown, 65% female. That's like a continuation of what we anticipated, but male turnout for the Democrat was better than we've seen in some other Republican races.
Mm, interesting.
Last cycle.
Racially side, looks like it breaks down kind of how you would expect.
Other than the fact that Earl Sears is a black woman.
Valid. Mm. Uncle Tom. Auntie Tom?
I don't know. I guess so from their perspective. But 93% black went to the Democratic course.
Yeah.
And then loss of the Latino vote is non-trivial too. I think that's a deal. That could be a signal of weaknesses with the Republican Party, at least Republican brand not doing as well or not sticking between Trump and the rest of the Republican brand.
Well, according to CNN, after Trump got elected, I do remember the rise in Latino vote that he got was because they're racist against black people.
Yeah, so. that's what they told me.
I'm pretty sure that's the reason for that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Keep going down. Memories. Yeah, all that stuff is pretty much what you would expect. Young people voting Democrat. On education, you have what we usually anticipate, which is more educated vote Democrat.
It's all the classic indicators. Nothing that seems super out of the norm for me.
So the high income went Democrat again. Let's go down. 100,000 or more.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah. 200,000 or more, 64% went to the Democrat. So if you keep going down, there's one on is someone in your household employed by the government?
Is somebody in your household, military veteran employment, anyone?
Yeah, federal or contractor. Okay. So Trump has fired 211,000 employees of the federal government.
Yeah, this if would be a big one.
If you're employed on the Hill, you live in D.C., which is very expensive, Baltimore, which is kind of country, in a lot of places, and Northern Virginia.
Most places.
Your wealthiest live in Northern Virginia and in D.C. and the nicer places. Then your very poorest live in Northern Virginia. So imagine trying to win an election in an off year with an 80% Democrat bias while Trump is firing 211,000 of these people.
Yeah, Republican had no chance.
Exactly, my boy.
There's no chance.
That's a tough like road to hoe. You know what I mean? So, and now even most of these, the total response is still no, right? Out of these responses, but you're still sitting with
it's such a widespread of people though. Yeah.
And we're talking about is a total vote count in the millions. So once you blow that up, that 64% leaning towards Spanger is real. That becomes a real variable.
Yeah, you can't even really use that as an indicator of like where, like, this is a very special case, you know?
Yes. Well, I don't know. This is only a poll. You have to limit what polls tell you. They don't tell you everything. We don't know everything about the real people who voted, but we are looking at it as a signal about those people as adjusted to the larger population. So how did Fed cuts, look at that, go back. How did Fed cuts affect your, right there.
How did Fed cuts this year affect your finances? 82%. A lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody got affected in Virginia.
A little at
63%.
That's a lot. That's tremendous. Like having any amount of Fed cuts, affect you is going to sway your vote.
Wasn't it something like that area of Virginia, just outside of D.C., has like the largest increase of wealth since COVID or something like that?
Yeah, McLean, Virginia is huge, and it's a lot of its contractors and people who work for companies that work for the that sell to the government. But it's the overall wealth in Northern Virginia has some of the wealthiest counties in America.
Yeah, so if you had like your point, if you got affected by Trump firing all these people, you're pissed. Yeah.
Condition of Virginia's economy, everybody's saying not good, obviously, because everybody got fired.
Well, actually, the majority, 51%, said good, right? Mm-hmm. But the people who are at the poor end, who are ranking the economy poor, were more likely to go for the Democrat, of course. Mm-hmm. And then not so good at 77%.
I should note that on the polling is that it's 33%, and then of those people.
Yeah.
You're broke!
So family's financial situation is another one. And like, look how it getting ahead is going to Earl Sears. Holding steady is pretty close, but going towards Spanger and then falling behind at 76%. And this is a measurement of how your impression of how things are going in the economy overall. And that I really want to emphasize, like, that says something, but still that holding steady is at 62 of the total percent. It just isn't an indicator that things are so bad economically that this is a problem. Now, is Trump, we can go to the next topic from here, but is Trump delivering on his promises about the economy, and is that what's undermining it? That was one of the major narratives that came out. If you look at the Mandani one, there was one other one on the Mandani I want to go over. Of the issues that mattered, what matters, right? Mm-hmm. Economy almost always ranks at the very top.
It's the economy,
inflation
stupid.
Always ranks relatively high when it's an inflation environment. And there are some indicators from issue polls as of late that inflation is still one of the top issues that people have. Inflation went down for a little bit, but now it's back up again. So what is Trump delivering of it on his promises?
And it's worth just seeing opinion of Trump as president here is, I mean,
it's pretty much a partisan breakdown.
Yeah, it's a partisan breakdown and like a very extreme. You know, if you like Trump, you really like Trump.
52%.
If you don't like Trump, you really don't like Trump.
Disapprove 97%.
Yeah, and those are all the Democrat voters that you would expect in Virginia, right?
Right, so, and that's kind of measuring what I said about the 80% tailwind. In that, in general, when you're the president of the opposing party, you do worse. Right, because that's true for almost every president, with the exception of George Bush. Right after they get elected, their approval points started going down because they start getting criticism, no matter what.
Well, yeah, and it just I mean, this is just a partisan breakdown of these polls. Like, it doesn't even seem to be like Virginia seems to have this extreme circumstance of it's right there where all these job cuts were happening on the federal government. Like, that seems to be probably the most important thing, it almost feels like, because like that's going to just be massive when it comes to the Virginia economy. Like, when we're looking, the people that think the economy is doing great in Virginia, specifically in Virginia, I imagine they're the people not affected by that.
Yeah.
And then the people that think it's not doing well, they're the people affected by it in some either first degree or second degree removed from it, you know?
So that is a measurement. There might be unseen measures of the economy and how well it's doing that isn't being captured by this particular question. When you go back and you look at other measurements of the economy and consumer confidence, it turns out a little bit different. And we'll dive into in a second. There's one more thing I want to know about this poll before we go on. Could you go back to Mamdani? I'm sorry, I forgot to hit this. And it's towards the bottom, and they asked about foreign policy, and it's weighing on the question. Because remember when we were watching the debate, and we're like, why are they asking about where you would go? And it is interesting to what degree.
To Israel and Ukraine.
It's predictive.
Virtue signal. Was it at the very bottom?
No, keep going by. It wasn't quite the very bottom, but it's towards the bottom.
Raising city taxes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Raising city taxes would help the economy, says Mamdani voters. but everyone said it would hurt the economy.
But yeah, that's the thing, is 60% of people in the exit polls would say it would hurt the economy. Right. So
the other guy still won. There's just a lot more people in there.
Is crime a problem? That crime seems like something that would matter on a New York City mayor thing.
Yeah, but Mamdani wins on the no vote for that.
Which is crazy, because I saw a video of him saying that violence is a social construct, and he was using that as justification for releasing prisoners.
Jeez.
So
that's like a suicidal empathy, man. That is so nuts. It is so nuts.
Yeah, I saw that video earlier today. I was just like, oh, geez. Most important issues. This is an interesting one. Cost of living. That I think would expect. So everybody's looking at cost of living. That seems very relevant.
Right, which is a good measure of like the economy not doing well and not tackling inflation hard enough.
And it appears that people think that of people where crime is their concern, they think Cuomo is the better person on that. And then when it comes to cost of living, people think free rent, free healthcare, like that's going to be the type of thing that you're going to be getting from Mamdani. So
yeah, but healthcare didn't even rank at a statistical significance.
Oh yeah, that's actually its own thing there.
So cost of living was so much more.
It's much more about the housing issue.
But dude, talk about housing. That's how you win right now. I think that's a good explanation for his success.
Kyle, you pass it. It's right under most important issues facing New York City.
Canada's position on Israel.
There we go.
Okay, so we have 38% of people say that it's a major factor on their vote. 29% say it's a minor factor, and then 28% say not at all.
Uh-huh. So 38%, a majority, said it was a major factor of the vote. Of those people, it's pretty much split 50-50.
Wow.
Right? And that between the two. Right? A minor factor at 53%, but it's still maintaining like a factor. If you go down to the next one, Kyle, is saying a factor, like compressing those two, 67% said their position on Israel was a factor in them voting. So when people say, this is something Dave Smith said, is like, he thinks that a big part of this is driven by Israel-Gaza. And people are like, how could, you know, no, people don't care about foreign policy. What are you talking about?
Which is why that question at the debate mattered.
This is it. This is something. And it has to do, of course, it has to do with the identity of Muslims and the identity of Jews and identity of Christians and Christian Zionists and then Christian non-dispensationalists. All those things are what's really at stake is the ethnic and identity questions. But the proxy vote for that is the foreign policy. And that's why it's the battleground for all of this.
It's this annoying symbol that we have to live with.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Cuomo has no position on this stuff. He's just like, whatever will get me elected. And I just
gabagoo.
But like it did matter a lot, and what turned out the vote, and whether or not it determined people voting for Mamdani more because he had the better position, that's not necessarily indicated here because we had the split 50-50 between 43% and 49%. That's statistically pretty much 50-50.
Interesting.
So the question is how is the economy going? And we had Scott Bessent coming on the news, and he made a case for why we are indeed in the golden age. Because if it is the economy stupid, and if that's why Mamdani won't run, he's saying it's like, well, Mamdani shouldn't have won. It shouldn't be predictive of a move towards the social democrat left. If it's not that, it's something else.
I think next year we're going to go back to what we had in President Trump's first term, which was very solid, high, non-inflationary growth. So we're going to see very strong job growth. And Jesse, I think we're going to have what I call parallel prosperity. Main Street can do well. Wall Street can do well. It's been a long time since Main Street's done well. And that's what happened in Trump 1.0. Hourly workers did better than supervisory workers. The bottom 50% of households had a net worth increase that was higher than the top 10%. So we are going to see Main Street surge here along with Wall Street, which we've already seen. So I think it's going to be a great year next year. I think inflation is going to come down. You know, we're seeing gasoline prices come down. We should see interest rates come down, which will help the housing market. I think next year we're going to.
Yeah, so of course he's being predictive, but that doesn't know what tell us what's happening now and how people are feeling now. And if the question is, well, it's going to be good, you got to fulfill that, right? And like, I think there is some patience amongst the right, and we see that in the polls where people are saying, hey, no, it's okay, it's going okay. Prices, and I think that's kind of like copium a little bit, because things are kind of tough for a lot of people in a lot of industries.
Prices of some things have gone down, other things have kind of stayed relatively stagnant. Like that's kind of been when it just comes from a pricing indicator of stuff.
Well, I got the CPI numbers, and we can look at that. I mean, it depends on where you're at and whether how directly you're affected by tariffs is how dramatic it is. Right, if you're in cabinetry right now, you're SOL, you are rough. It's a rough building trade market, especially when you're trying to expand the housing supply. And you know, this is consumer price index for all urban consumers, all items in U.S. city average, right? And this is the index for it. And we're still looking at a pretty substantial increase since the election.
Yikes.
It's the same trajectory as before the election.
Well, yeah, it's worth noting. This big jump here is the COVID jump, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're just kind of on the same path that we've been on that regard.
And what we're measuring there really is the enormous leap in into money supply to print all the stuff for the CARES stuff. If you go to the, maybe we can narrow the time frame down.
How do I do that with this?
Right underneath frequency. So, yeah, this is going from 1947. The 10-year. Yeah, that kind of shows it a little more dramatically. But yeah, I mean, really, what we need is price deflation, but we can never get there because of our economic dogma. But this is one of those things that would actually help everyday people who are our consumers.
No, we always got to hit that magic 2%. It's always the 2% number is what we're always magically trying to aim for.
Yeah. So if you look at job openings, another measure of the economy, I got some Fed data on that. And this is another good proof of like, where people are at, they're not necessarily seeing a difference from Joe Biden yet. I'll give Scott the benefit of the doubt by saying yet. And with the right amount of predicting economic stuff.
That was because I read a lot of Stephen Moran's original economic reports before Trump even took office. And that was always kind of the prediction in their models, was that it would be much more of a 2026 thing is where we start to see a lot of these. And that was before any of these policies ever came into fruition.
Right.
Was them always talking about that. So that's always where I've been kind of like, let's wait and see. I want to wait and see before I make too much judgments on it. Mm-hmm. Because that seems to be what the plan is.
Right. And the question is whether or not what we're observing right now, and zooming back to my bigger question is things like, is the job openings, this is the total non-farm job openings. You know, we had a huge collapse, of course, during 2020, during the pandemic, and then a huge expansion. But people are still having a hard time finding a job, even though that we're seeing a decline in that. The unemployment rate is relatively low. It's not super high right now. But that does include a lot of people who are just simply checked out of the market altogether, who are on disability, who could be working, but are just, you know, playing the game.
Which there's a lot of trying to cut a lot of that out. That was a lot of the Medicaid stuff that was going on during the big, beautiful bill era a few months ago, right?
Right.
Was trying to stop that gamesmanship from happening.
And we're still there, right? And that's what the shutdown's about. It's about, you know, exactly, all the excess money from the COVID era, that it's all inflation, it's all on debt. Of course, Republicans never make the case that this inflationary debt spending is actually what's driving up prices. They just say, don't give healthcare to illegals, which is, I understand, is a good talking point, but it's like part of the larger picture of why we actually need to cut the spending.
Another big thing is just that the government shutdown is happening amongst all of this too. Mm-hmm.
Can't be easy in Virginia, especially.
Yeah. And Virginia especially, would be one of those places. But also just like a lot of those states that require a lot of that the federal funding and federal handouts and things like that are New York, you know? So there's probably a correlation there that exists where, and it's hard to get around, like, you know, you might blame the Democrats and, you know, they are kind of the ones being stalwart and keeping the election going. But to the average person, you're looking at it, well, Trump's the big man in office and Republicans own the House and the Senate right now. So obviously their fault, right? Like that's right. One narrative that could be run out of this, mm-hmm. right?
And overall Trump support as a proxy for overall Republican support. Mm-hmm. So I have the Rasmussen poll here on Trump support and remembering that. So, you know, where we are at will be determined by whether or not they can do what Scott Bessent said, right? Mm-hmm. If it gets back to the 2017 economy, go down. There's a graph that shows. Yeah, there we go. And it has a disapproval one if you go down to the next one below that.
Yeah, Trump approval, Trump disapproval.
Yeah, approval, disapproval. Yeah, strongly approve, strongly disapprove. Right? And, like, he's not doing that bad for an incumbent president.
It's kind of what you would expect, to be honest.
It's pretty close to partisan measure with independents obviously making a difference. Is he losing the independents? Yes. Independents do not have your patience, Kyle. They're not willing. They have not read the predictions. They're not waiting 2 years. They're saying, I want my better economy now. And I think that's understandable from the perspective of that's how democracy works. To the degree to which the only real argument that I've seen is the argument of like something more dramatic is happening is some of the county numbers from the Virginia and the Georgia races, where areas that don't normally go Democrat either just did not have Republicans show up at all because maybe voter fatigue or because there just isn't that much hype that they're feeling, right? The hype is all rhetorical. The hype is Scott Bessent saying how great things are going to be. It's Trump doing hype reels about ICE raids. It isn't something that people are feeling yet.
Got to stop the flood.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Halo reference. This approval, disapproval, this seems very normal for any president right now to me.
It's not especially bad.
Yeah. No. Like this doesn't seem anything that I would expect. Like no president ever goes up to 50%. Like they're always kind of sitting in the 30s and 40s% wise on both sides of this equation,
at least in the modern era. Right.
Yeah.
There was a time before Nixon when that was not true, but yeah, that's how it is.
So like, it's one of those things where I'm not really seeing anything from this data here to really make any clear indicators to me. Like maybe if this data, if we start to see that this is an actual trend line and this is starting to slowly decrease, like right now you could maybe make that argument. Like there's initial hype in the very beginning of the, of the phase where everybody's like, but then everything kind of settled down and it just looks like it's a stagnant line that you would expect for, you know, like a stable coin in the crypto markets to move on.
Right. So like to wrap things up, my analysis of this is that Mamdani is a luxury belief candidate who ran on having a very clear message, a very savvy campaign, and running as a youth candidate against in an era where more radical politics are in fashion and where clear I'm going to be the change candidate is still popular and populism still works. So I think that's what it signals. It does not signal a high support for democratic socialism, a high support for high taxes and like super active government. Indicates more of that, but that's what New York's already like. So what so the only lesson I can pull out of that is something like populism still in.
Yeah.
And a savvy internet candidate still in. It doesn't tell me that the Republican brand is being damaged by the civil war or that the weakness on Israel is somehow a problem. I'm seeing all these people or identity politics, like Republicans play identity politics and all of a sudden they lose elections. Stuff like that. It just isn't and that's what Vivek said. I just don't see any of that coming through the data or anything reliable. I think those are just trying to fit a narrative. That's it.
I could see it affecting voter turnout in the midterms of like, if this thing continues to brew for another year, then we would end up seeing, and I don't think this would be like all of a sudden Republicans are going to be voting for Democrats. It's just going to be, it would affect enthusiasm in the midterms.
The vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a very spicy primary, you know, this primary season is going to be wild. Thomas Massey getting primaried by a MAGA candidate is going to piss a lot of people off. And on the other side of it, there's, you know,
how many people are going to have to like, I disavow Nick Fuentes.
Yeah,
like, you know how many like struggle sessions we're going to have to watch? It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Tucker Carlson had on the guy who's going to be primarying our guy, Lindsey Graham, on his show and did a whole episode about it.
He also had the guy primarying eye patch guy.
Oh yeah, Dan Crenshaw.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He also had him recently.
Yeah, Paul Danz is the guy. I think it's worth watch. this sort of like this primary tit for tat on what's America first is going to continue to be the narrative, and people who aren't distinguishing it within a narrative are not going to do well. Mm-hmm. Right? You got like, it's not that you got to pick a side, it's rather you got to have clarity about your view on these questions. As we saw, voters actually care about this question a lot. At least they did in the New York mayoral race.
It's going to be so annoying. Every single week, there's going to be like two candidates that are going to be like, yes, I disavow Nick Fuentes. And it's going to be like a whole thing that we're going to have to like every single week. The algorithm on Twitter is just going to be like what a candidate said about Nick Fuentes. It's going to be so annoying.
He's going to own the year if that's what happens.
It's going to be the case. Just mark my words. That'll be the case. Mm. And it's going to be annoying.
Well, that definitely helps people not listen to him at all. I'm sure he'll exactly. just disappear.
Yeah, make him disappear.
You want the guy to disappear, you should stop doing that. You know?
Yeah, it's just like, again, like they have not learned from the last six times they've tried it.
It's a Streisand effect thing. Mm. Like, it's going
to
be that.
I think another note, especially to do the prehistory here of what is happening. Ben Shapiro, in his video at the very front, said the Groypers are starting a war with the MAGA right. And what I suggest is that that's not the right way to see it. That doesn't comply with the facts. I think the right way to see it is that there's always been a contradiction within the MAGA movement that is now being exposed because of Gaza and watching an ethnic cleansing or whatever this operation is in 4K right in front of your face every single day for 2 years, got a lot of people educated about Israel, got a lot of people like looking at 60 years of history and saying like, wait, why are we on these guys' side? Just they don't seem like the good guys. And just the slaughter of children and women. It just can't be watched and people have the same amount of support. You can't sustain that, and you can't gaslight people out of that position. So this exposure has to be worked out. It has to be worked out before the general of next year. Otherwise, I think you're right. This could have next year effects with the general election with low enthusiasm if we can't work that out. That way, the peace process has to happen. But Israel's not letting that peace process happen easily. Mm-hmm. We got killings happening every couple days where they're bombing people and killing people.
There's also just like organized crime families in Gaza trying to like vie for territory inside there, probably propped up by various intelligence agencies. And you know, it's going to be messy. It's going to be a lot of hiccups.
Right. As long as that's happening, as long as they can't establish that, there's going to be continued question of that. And then they're going to continue begging the questions as long as the folks in the pro-Israel side dodge debates and don't actually discuss it.
Well,
and just call people anti-Semites rather than actually engage.
And I think on the right wing in particular, it's actually less so about Gaza particularly, and it's more so about just feeling the annoying vibe of like the paid surrogates and the propaganda is even more so. It's like less about the war itself. It's like the preaching of like, this is what you have to believe type of thing. And I think that's particularly where I think a lot of the young men are, where they're just like, stop it. I'm done with the preachiness. You know, I'm done with this thing. I'm done with like your paid surrogates telling me what I'm supposed to believe all the time. And I think a lot of them just, they don't even really care about Gaza. It's just like, I'm done with like the influence on my mind campaign.
Right. And that's the decree to what's America first. It's like, we shouldn't care about this tiny country in the Middle East that has nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It should be that they have nothing to do with this because it isn't clear. No one's made an argument yet about why they're such a great ally. Mm-hmm. So please make it clear.
Well, because just asking makes you an anti-Semite.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because right now, it seems like Qatar is a way better ally. I don't know.
Thank you for your sponsorship, Qatar. All right. That's it for
today.
They
pay for that nice base and everything.
I wish, dude.
I just don't get it. They pay for that nice base.
All right, guys, thank you so much for watching Human Reaction. It was a great time. Please like, subscribe, put a comment below. Let us know where we screwed up. Go fight someone in the comments, because the more comments we have, the better we do on the algorithm. It's just how it is. So just go pick a fight, you know? Just find a reason to do that. And if you want to pick a fight in our Discord, also a great time, jump into Discord. This week, we picked some of these this topic kind of thread based upon a poll that we put in there. So if you want to have an impact on the show, definitely jump in and we'll put in a poll and you can tell us, hey, this is the issue I want you guys to talk about the most. We're responsive to our people. Thank you so much for watching. On behalf of David Brand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett on the Buttons, we'll catch you guys next week.
Peace. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.